we're coming up on the 5-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Now, you spent a long time living down there post Katrina, doing your columns for the New Yorker, and then subsequently the book Nine Lives. Have you? When's the last time you were down there?
May. I was there in May for the funeral of a beautiful young man who was murdered. Kid who was in my book. A guy named Brandon Franklin.
So what's Brandon's story? How was he murdered?
The mother of his child, with whom he had split up, had a fight with her current boyfriend. He stormed out of the house. She called Brandon up and asked him to come over and change the locks on her door. And while he was doing that, the ex-boyfriend came back and shot Brandon 15 times. Right in front of the woman and the little children.
So what was that funeral like? That must have been incredibly
enormous.
Difficult.
It was gigantic. It was a jazz funeral. It's the first time I've ever been to a jazz funeral. So first there was this tremendous service in a church. Brandon was a beloved guy. He was assistant band director at the high school where he had finished up, and we brought him outside and put him in a horse-drawn hearse, and there was a band, and we all walked a couple of miles in the heat to a cemetery and laid him to rest. The New Orleans way.
Well, I know that the book that you wrote focused on these 9 particular people, but obviously you got to know so many more people and really got to know the city of New Orleans when you were living down there.
Yes.
5 years later, 5 years post-Katrina, how did you find it?
Well, I have a particular point of view on this. And I go to New Orleans and I celebrate. I think it is fabulous what has happened there, because not only have they rebuilt the city physically, and I was there for the disaster. I was there when it was full of water. And I thought, this city's never come back. I mean, it was completely destroyed. And it even looked worse after the water was gone. And it was silent and mud and muck, and it smelled so bad, and no birds anywhere. I mean, it was really dead. And to see it now, you have to go looking for signs of destruction. The city is rocking. It's jumping. Now, it has its problems. But even more than the physical reconstruction, is they have saved the city's soul. They have saved the city's culture. New Orleans is unlike any place else in the United States. I describe it as, if the United States is run by this corporate capitalist ethic of earn more, spend more, consume more, move faster, work faster, communicate faster, multitask, New Orleans is a city-size act of civil disobedience. New Orleans just doesn't do that. And that's what makes it such a great place. It's the Big Easy. I mean, there, people see their friends and their family all the time, every day. I mean, sitting on the porch and drinking a beer is what life is all about. It's not the thing you jam into an otherwise busy day. Art and music and cooking and Mardi Gras suits and planning the Mardi Gras crew parades and planning balls and dances and parties. I mean, that is what life is there. And it is not a high-achieving place. And the big fear after Katrina on the part of the people of New Orleans was not that they weren't going to be able to rebuild their houses. Nobody was afraid of that. Nobody was afraid of the bricks and mortar, hammering the nails, gutting the houses. They could all do that. What everybody there was afraid of was the developers and the Urban Land Institute and the big high-level commissions who came to New Orleans and talked about it as a blank slate and how they were going to make New Orleans bigger and better. And everybody there heard that as a recipe for just another city driven by the dollar and the clock, and they didn't want it. And what was so amazing was the people of New Orleans after Katrina were about the most powerless Americans there were. And they were broke, they were scattered, they were demoralized, they were just flat on their backs. And in comes the modern might of American real estate capitalism. And David won. David slew Goliath. And it's an amazing story. Now, when I talk like this in New Orleans, everybody in New Orleans who lives there day to day is all focused on what's still not back. Most of all, the quarter or third of the population that was never able to come back. But, this restaurant, that business, these people, that family, this block, they see the glass half empty still. I really don't think they give themselves enough credit for the incredible thing they did. And the physical rebuilding is just the tip of it.
And those people who haven't come back, Have they stayed away because they found better lives elsewhere, or really there's nothing for them to come back to? Like places like the Ninth Ward that were totally destroyed, and particularly those areas that really were economically deprived to start with. Where are those people?
A lot of people want to come back and can't. A lot of people, you know, there were a lot of people in New Orleans who did not live very well-organized lives. And that was the great thing about New Orleans, is you could live in a house that your great-grandfather built. So you don't have to pay anything to live in the house. And really live on very little. And your whole world was your neighborhood. I mean, I met many, many, many people in and from New Orleans who really never left their neighborhood. I mean, I know a lot of people who've never been to the French Quarter. A lot of people in New Orleans who've never been to the French Quarter. Why on earth would I go to the French Quarter? I live in the 7th Ward. I live in the 13th Ward. Why would I go there? Yeah. Uptown people who don't go downtown. Downtown people who don't go uptown. So New Orleans was full of people who spent their whole lives never seeing a face they hadn't known from the day they were born. And now you take those people. They didn't have cars. They lived in a 15 square block area. I mean, their whole world was their neighborhood. And you flush them out of that city and you put them in some soulless suburb of Houston where you need a car to get everywhere and they don't know anybody. There have been a tremendous number of suicides. There are a lot of people who just haven't been able to get it together to come back. And there are also some people who got outside of New Orleans and saw Texas and Atlanta and said, whoa, look at this. This place works. I'm going to stay here. You know, there were some of those who, you know, sent their kids to schools that were freshly painted and had great teachers and books and thought, well, I'm going to stay here. But I think most of the people who got driven out of New Orleans want to come back, and most of them have come back.
So what's left to be done? What needs to be done?
Well, crime is terrible. I mean, another great achievement of post-Katrina New Orleans is that they fixed the school system. And maybe the worst thing about pre-Katrina New Orleans was the school system. And
although a lot of people might say it's not been fixed, it's just been changed and taken over by interests who want to really change public school systems, the growth of charter schools,
right,
etc.
Right. And that is the standard received lefty position, right? That, oh, they busted the teachers' union. Well, I am a union guy from way back, right? I am an ardent union supporter. I'm a tax and spend Democrat, been a union man my whole life, and the New Orleans Teachers Union deserved to be busted because they weren't serving the kids. And I'm all for serving the workers, right? I'm all for union serving the workers, but if you're not teaching the kids, that's really got to come first. There are for-profit corporations running charter schools in New Orleans, and that rubs me the wrong way as a lefty, right? But you go to those schools and the kids are in classrooms with motivated, animated teachers and books, and the kids are enjoying it and they're doing well. And I got to stand back and say, you know, this is better, right? It's not my perfect socialist vision of the world, but it is better.
Now, you were there in May. Obviously, the Gulf oil spill was ongoing in May.
Yes.
What was the impact on New Orleans? What was the feeling down there at that time?
It was unbelievably dispiriting. You know, to just be feeling like they were coming back from Katrina and then to have this happen, and to really have no faith at all that they're going to get any help or that the Gulf is ever going to be cleaned up. And the Gulf, it is the bosom from which New Orleans suckles. I mean, it's the seafood comes from there, and the tourists come for the seafood, and New Orleans depends on the tourists, and it's a unmitigated catastrophe.
So the future of New Orleans, you're obviously optimistic and hopeful. You were saying maybe some of the folks there aren't quite so hopeful.
Oh, everybody is hopeful. I mean, New Orleans it's going to be there. It's going to be there forever. It is not a place where somebody who really wants to achieve a lot and make a lot of money and get a lot done, become famous and kind of make themselves grand. It's not your kind of place, you know. People in New Orleans are not oriented toward themselves. They're oriented toward their communities. They're oriented toward their families, their friends, the Mardi Gras crew, the Mardi Gras Indian tribe. People don't say I very much. They say we. And it's, for those kind of people, it's heaven on earth.